Hello, dear listeners. This is True Story Podcast, powered by Institute of Documentary Film in Prague. I am Ivona Remundová, and today I'm talking to Zoe Ayano and Alessandra Tatic. Hello, Zoe. Hello, Alessandra.
Hi.
Hi, Ivona.
Alessandra and Zoe have co-authored several short films together and have just finished their first feature-length documentary debut, Lotacia, a powerful documentary that takes place in eastern Serbia, in an environment with a traditional culture known for its magical practices and supernatural creatures, dragoons. The central point of the economy in this area is a copper mine, which, after being sold by the Serbian state to a Chinese mining company, continues to expand and poses a major threat to the traditional practices of the local population. Furthermore, the pollution of the landscape is so critical that even locals refer to it as driving away the dragons, which for generations were believed to live in the local forests. The film will premiere at the Go East Festival in Wiesbaden, and it is also part of the distribution program East Silver Caravan by the Institute of Documentary Film in Prague. Your project, your fresh film, Flotacia, doesn't have an English title. Why is it?
Oh, God. I mean, I'm the one who fought most strongly for it to have only a Serbian title. So I guess it's on me. I mean, we thought long and hard about changing the title. It was Lotacia for a long time. Lotacia is a specific part of the mining process. You see it in the film. It looks like a kind of hellscape. There's these black bubbles of lava that kind of seethe and simmer. And it's both deadly, but also really prestigious. And the reason that we chose the name for the film is that it's a film about sort of these very complicated relationships between things that give you your identity, but also things that are harming you at the same time. And so Lotacia seemed like the meeting point. It's got a magical quality, but it's very industrial. And it lives in the collective imagination as this really special place, this kind of mysterious place, but it's actually kind of killing everyone. So that's why we wanted to have it as the title. But if you change it to English and say flotation, it loses the specificity. It sounds really vague, and it's not clear that it's referring specifically to that one process. And it also sounds like kind of pretentious. As soon as you say flotation, it sounds like we're trying to make some strange metaphor. And that really wasn't the case. So I also just really like the cadence of the word flotacia. There's something very satisfying about it. And I think also for the people in the town, they like separated the word from its actual meaning. I think they use it in a way that doesn't refer to the real meaning. So that's why I felt it should be flotacia. And we just couldn't find an English equivalent.
Zoe Ayano is a filmmaker, editor, and translator from Great Britain with a background in visual anthropology. She also writes about film and contributes to the East European Film Bill 10. Her work generally focuses on Central and Eastern Europe and often addresses topics such as archetypes of womanhood and the importance of storytelling in daily life. Her short animated documentary, All Her Dying Lovers, was made in collaboration with Anna Benner, premiered at the Hot Dogs Film Festival in Toronto in 2020, and was also published by the New York Times Doc Online platform. Zoe has been selected for the Wapping Project Art Residency in Berlin, the Meduse Art Residency in Quebec, and is currently artist in residence at the Aix-en-Provence Opera Festival. Before we jump into talking about your newest project, could you tell us a little bit more of your previous cooperation, because this is not your first common project, Alessandra?
Yeah, well, we met at an ethnographic film festival in 2015 in Rovinj in Croatia, actually. And we decided to hop on an immediate journey into Vlach, an Eastern Serbian witchcraft. We were actually looking for filming the magical practices and occultism in the region. But then we ended up meeting a whole series of incredible characters that inspired us to start working on Flotacia in the first place. But then we also worked on several shorts in the meantime. So first we had shot a film on a ghost whisperer who falls into trance, Ivanka, and talks to the dead in 2019, commissioned by the London Short Film Festival. And that was an incredibly adventurous experience because we didn't know. We had some archival footage, and then we went literally looking for this woman in the woods with very vague explanations where she could be. And we ended up finding her and actually filming the whole shoot with her. And then the second film was Maria e Toma, which premiered last year. And we actually accidentally met this couple at a village traditional Vlach party that takes place every August. And we met them and they were so charming, and they were friends with one of our protagonists from Flotatia, actually. And they invited us over for their wedding anniversary. They were celebrating 13 months from getting married in their 70s. And they were just incredibly full of humor and joy, and we enjoyed going to meet their place of birth and that they came back to after decades of living abroad. So they told us a story of building a monument to their homeland in the village, actually at the entrance of the village. And we decided to start a series of short documentaries based on this idea of diaspora coming back to the Balkans, to Eastern Serbia specifically, and building monuments to their lives that they had abroad.
Let's go to your newest project, Flotatia. Just recently, you were given the eSilver Award of the Institute of Documentary Film for this project, and the statement of the jury says this: "The film explores the conflicts between nature and tradition and industry and modernity with a high level of cinematic language and a rich narrative that bridges past and present." When reading this statement of the jury and thinking of the very beginning of this project, is this what you wanted to do? Is this what you wanted to say?
I think at the very beginning, we can confidently say no. I'm going to be really honest and say I think it took us a while to decide really what we wanted to say and what the film would be. I think originally we didn't have the ambition to make a feature film. At the beginning, we thought we would make a short or maybe a series of shorts. And we didn't originally intend to focus on Majdanpek or this family specifically. We kind of envisaged it more about the whole area and about Black culture. But then it just kind of happened that the characters were so strong, it was clear that they needed a film. And then the more time that we spent with them, then we kind of understood what was important about their lives and how their lives were being really ruled by the socio-political context they were living in. And so the elements eventually fell into place. I think, I'm not sure I heard this before because we weren't actually there when we were given the award. I think it's a really nice, flattering, but also quite accurate description of where we've ended up. But definitely at the beginning, we didn't really start down this path at all. But we got there bit by bit.
Alessandra, without spoiling anything important for the future viewers, can you tell us a little bit more about your characters?
Our characters are a brother and sister, Dragan and Desa. They're both in their 60s, and Dragan was employed at the mine for a very long time. He actually started working there when he was 18. And Desa worked in the local hotel. There's one hotel in Majdanpek, and it's focused at pretty much entertaining the miners. So Desa was this incredibly capable woman who managed to handle big groups of miners, even while the hotel was a gambling house. So she's really a very captivating character that came to our attention immediately after meeting her, as well as Dragan, even though Dragan had this magical realm about him, right? That he inherited the tradition of dragon hunting from his father, De La Pera, who unfortunately died during the shooting, but we did manage to film some material with him beforehand and to really get a sense of what Vlach traditional magical practices used to be for the prior generations and how they were hoping to make this pass this on to newer generations. So Dragon is like the intermediate point in the history of Vlach culture, contemporary culture, and their family as well, because there are two more generations after Dragon, right? So when we started filming, there were four generations of the family that we were involved with, and then unfortunately that had passed on, and then we focused more on how Dragan was hoping that his son wouldn't have to go into the same line of work, but then unfortunately he ended up doing that, and the mine was privatized in the meantime by a Chinese company that acquired it. And this situation also changed radically, because when the Chinese company acquired a majority of the mine shares, they also acquired all of the real estate linked to the mine. So this house was mortgaged to the new Chinese company. And now I won't tell anything else, not to spoil it, but that's more or less the setup that we have with the characters.
Alessandra Tatic is a post-Yugoslav visual anthropologist based in France. She is also a PhD candidate in anthropology at the School of Advanced Studies in Social Sciences in Paris. Her research interests span across migration, gender, and labor studies, grounded in feminist collaborative methodology. Alessandra's ethnographic fieldwork is global, with a focus on the Balkans and Mediterranean. There, she has spent over a decade working with and for the women's movement. She is also an active member of Sindilar, a pan-national feminist union of household and care workers based in Barcelona, where she co-develops grassroots communication strategies and designs multimedia outputs. Alessandra's films and research projects combine feminist, anti-colonial, and ethnographic approaches with impact-oriented storytelling. There are these two elements of the film. One is observing the colonization practices, or like witnessing the place in Europe being colonized by a Chinese company. And then at the same time, a family who is into the dragon hunting phenomenon. What is this? What does it mean for you, this dragon hunting phenomenon? Is it like purely positive or negative in your point of view?
We've been back and forward on that, I think, a lot over the years. I think for me personally, it took a long time before I even considered it as negative, because I guess also the way that the characters spoke about it, you know, that they were sad that it was something that was disappearing, and therefore you kind of assume. But of course, when they describe the dragons, I mean, the dragons would attack people in various ways. We could talk for a long time about the different forms that they take and the effect that they can have on the society. But then the family that we're filming, really their role was kind of as the protectors of the town in a way. So of course, if those services are no longer needed, then it kind of deprives them of their role and of the thing that makes them proud and the thing that separates them from other people. But it's definitely not a straightforward relationship, because there is some sort of symbiosis between the people and the dragons and the dragon hunters. But in the end, the dragons are a damaging force, but they're also kind of just accepted as part of it. And I think there's an interesting parallel with the mine, because the mine is also the only source of survival, but it's also killing everybody at the same time. So it's all interwoven in this very strange way of sort of love and hate between the things that you need, but the things that are also hurting you at the same time.
Alessandra, when coming to your characters and trying to convince them to be in the film, what did you tell them in the first moment? Or then second question, what made them want to be in your film?
Yeah, so Dragan already had an experience, bizarrely. He had an experience of shooting a film for the national TV station. But this was decades ago, right? So him and his father already participated in a project of this sort. But TV documentary and art house film are two different industries, so it was pretty different, especially given that we all come from a background of social sciences. So our approach to filming was very different. It was less immediate, it was I dare to say, less superficial as well. And we just took our time to get to know them, to become friends with them, to become really a part of the family before starting to make any bolder moves in terms of filming. We did shoot, for the first time we met Dragan, we did film him. And we use very few excerpts from that interview, only audio from that interview in certain parts of the film, because our relationship evolved naturally from that point a lot. And also we got a better sense of what he was comfortable saying in front of a camera and what he wasn't. It's very different when you have a 9-year-long relationship with a protagonist than when you come once and interview someone and then disappear, right? So we were really hoping that we could build a radically different relationship with him than what he had with the previous filmmakers. And I hope we succeeded. I think we did.
I always imagine that the film somehow should also help our characters sometimes to understand better what's happening, sometimes to help with the cause they are trying to solve. Do they see your film as highlighting troubles of their life or troubles of their environment?
I think when you were asking before about what's in it for them, I think honestly a lot of it is boredom. Like they're really bored and they're always so happy when we would come and then they'd kind of show us off around the town. I mean, this was something we had to be very careful with, though, in general, that they didn't want to be explicitly politicized. I think it was really important for us and for them that we didn't sort of make them into kind of any kind of political scapegoats or definitely we never wanted to victimize them in any way either. So this is why we ended up with what's really, I suppose, a very character-centric approach, because we just wanted to show them as much as possible. And I don't think that they really see themselves as kind of victims of anything in particular. I mean, I think this kind of creative documentary is something that's very foreign to them, and they never really understood what we wanted to do with it. They understand ethnographic film, funnily, because there's so many people coming to study like Black culture that makes sense to them. And they just wanted us for a long time to record traditions and songs and various things. And they didn't really understand why we wanted to film them and how they live. But I think they've got it on some level, finally, at least I hope they have. But yeah, I mean, I think they're happy for any attention that gets brought to the town, but they don't necessarily see themselves as kind of figureheads of some political movement in particular.
Yeah, they don't. But at the same time, I mean, there's just absolutely shocking marginalization that took place in Eastern Serbia in terms of two very simple, well, let's say three very simple lines of political neglect. One is infrastructure. The roads are terrible and you practically cannot reach these places in a decent way. Two is education, that a lot of schools have shut down over the past decades. And Dragan's school, for example, doesn't exist anymore. His son's school doesn't exist anymore either. So we really went into these details with them, right? And trying to gain some sort of a retrospective approach to what has happened to this community in the past decades. And then the third line is, unfortunately, the health system. Well, the access to healthcare is really, really terrible. And they struggle with this every day. And people have to go to other cities or even to go to Belgrade to the ER, which is more than 3 hours away from where they live, because the sanitary system is just incredibly inefficient and incapable of adapting to their needs. So these three lines of inequality and lack of access to social and public services were really shocking for us. And we hope that in some way, at least, the film will manage to draw some attention to this.
With the Flotacija project, you participated in several pitch forums. Was it helpful, not helpful? What was the experience with pitching this project for you?
I mean, definitely helpful, especially whenever we won something. But I think it's always good. It's a film that's can be quite abstract in some ways. It's very concrete and down to earth in some ways and abstract in other ways. So I think the practice of explaining it to people and condensing it is always, always helpful in that way. Of course, sometimes you go the other way when you end up spending more time pitching than you do filming, and that's a separate issue. But yeah, of course, I think especially at the beginning, when we hadn't really been out in public with it much, and we weren't really sure how people were going to react of us going up on stage and saying, so we're making a film about dragons, but it's really a film about mines. Give us money. Thank you very much.
Alessandra, would you like to add something to this?
No, I think Zoe summed it up pretty well. I mean, it is important to get a sense of how the industry and audiences react to the story that we have to tell. But what I found really interesting as an anthropologist as well was that the difference that we noticed between how Western pitching forums and markets reacted to the topic and how Eastern European ones reacted, right? We really felt at home in Eastern Europe in this sense. And we had more on-point questions, right? That there was less explanation and context needed for people to understand what was going on. And whereas in Western Europe, we really felt like huge disconnection between, at least from my side, between what the audience was reading from, what we were trying to say, and the expectations and the needs they had to consume a certain type of content that we weren't really up for giving, right?
So where can people see your film in the following days and months?
So our premiere is coming up April 29th at Go East Festival in Wiesbaden, Germany. And then the Serbian premiere will take place on May 15th at Beldox International Festival in Belgrade.
And do you plan any online distribution so people from all around Europe and all around the world can one day see your film?
Absolutely. We just haven't figured out an exact strategy yet. But I think for people in Germany, it will be online for the duration of Go East. And for people in Serbia, it will be online for the duration of Bellbox. So yeah, we just need to figure out the rest of the world, but it's on the way.
My favorite question is always, have your characters already seen the film? And if so, what did they say?
No, I mean, they haven't seen the whole film. We have shown them bits the last time we went there. And they were, I don't know, it's always a strange experience. You know, they were at the same time so happy to see, I mean, someone filming their lives for the past 9 years and seeing their late grandfather interacting with us on camera. And there's so much material. There was also so much family archival material for them, regardless of the last montage that we made for the film. So they were happy in this sense. But then on the other hand, it's always weird to see oneself on the big screen and see how we portrayed them regardless of how they see themselves, right? So there's always this juxtaposition of perspectives that is intimately very complicated, I think. Well, we hope that the big screen in Belgrade won't disappoint them, and then we will be able to continue our good relationship.
Yeah, we offered to show it to them before in case they, you know, were nervous about anything or whatever, but they're quite excited, I think, to watch it in Belgrade, so they want to save it. But yeah, I mean, it was really funny for me that watching them watch the rough cut that we had, and it was just like it was one whole family movie. And I'm really curious if they're going to still see it like that in the cinema context, and then how they'll feel with several hundred people sat in a room watching their family videos. But I mean, I'm also happy if they see it that way in the end, I think.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this interview. Thank you very much for your wonderful film, and big luck with your film and with any of your future projects. Thank you very much, Alessandra and Zoe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ivana.